Let's give a warm welcome to tonight's speaker, Bill from Santee. Welcome, Bill.
I like that idea. My name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic. Nice suit, huh? In full transparency, my daughter got married last summer and I had to buy the damn thing, so I'm getting every penny I can out of it before the moths get it. I don't wear suits much anymore. I'm retired and I like jeans and t-shirts and a full relaxed life. But and welcome to the newcomers. I don't necessarily agree that you're the most important person in the room, but welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope you frickin' stay. My wife is out of town, so she apologizes for sending me unsupervised. And I am. And for those of you that looked on the website and were expecting to see Glenn A. tonight, obviously that's not going to happen. You got me. And I appreciate John for asking me to share tonight. I always appreciate the chance to share at Alcoholics Anonymous. It has saved my life, and you people are responsible for that. And 55 years, my God. I am so glad I got out of bed to see that today. Man, that is something else. Thank you. I am so glad to see that. I just got back from LA, and I got called up there. My belly button birthday was this month too. It was Monday, and Tuesday morning I got a call from my son, and he said, "I have a tremendous amount of pain. I need, you know." And I said, "Well, you better get to the hospital." And his buddy took him to the hospital. Now, he had been hospitalized in November for acute pancreatitis. And most people in this room have been around long enough to know what causes acute pancreatitis, except for maybe 1% of the time, right? It's drinking. And so I got up there, and he was in a bad, bad way. He had probably lost about 70% of his pancreas. And he's 29 years old. And he's an incredible young man, right? But here I am, faced with my son and the surgeon walking in and saying, "Look, this time is not like last November. There's a chance he could die here. And if he doesn't die, he's going to be here for at least a month, if not more." And so, you know, I have talked to him about drinking, right? And I've talked to a lot of people about drinking, but the closer it is to home, the harder it is. And so I get a little bit bitchy about the subject when I hear newcomers running their mouth about how they got this program, how they understand it, and they're going to namby-pamby drift their way into Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, maybe get sober, maybe do this step or that step, and, you know, go hang out some rich fart rehab and have acupuncture massage and... Okay, it's obvious that wasn't my experience. And what I want to tell my son is, look, get over your self-entitled little bitchy compilation of hurts and worries and nonsense and grab a pair of nuts and grow the fuck up. And that's what I want to say. But that kind of is filed under a frothy emotional peel, isn't it? That as alcoholics, that just makes us dig in our feet even further. And so what I'm faced with is what the tools of this program have given me. It's just to love them, you know? Just like the newcomer that walks in full of shit. You just gotta love them up. And then maybe, just maybe, they hang around long enough that they'll get the picture. See, my son is going to be faced with the proposition of, you know, he may have to have insulin for a while. He's done so much damage to his pancreas. He's definitely going to be out of a master's program he is in. And he may lose his girlfriend. And, you know, she's a marvelous thing. She showed up, and I had never met her. You know, he's the worst part of this, okay, is that his mom did this same thing 21 years ago. It's like reliving the same freaking nightmare. It's like carbon copy behavior. She was in the ICU. She was in there for 8 days. The priest came in, the social worker came in, the doctors came in, the nurses came in and said, if you continue to drink, you will die. And what's the first thing she said when she got out of there? Well, they just told me I had to control it. That's our disease, folks. In full flight from reality, delusional to the nth degree. We will drink against our will. We will drink when it's going to kill us. Because the disease is calling us. It's always calling us. Even when we're 55 years sober, just dancing down the other side of that thin veil, it's like waiting for you to make a mess up and just say, you know, it doesn't come at us anymore like, hey, why don't you drink? No, that's way too blunt and way too unsubtle. The disease is over there like, you know, yeah, you don't need to go around and talk to that new guy. He's not very cool. You know, you don't need to get off the couch tonight. Come on, there's football on. Really? Go to that stupid meeting, hang out with those booger pickers? Jeez. How is that going to change your life? And so, you know, his mom went through the same thing, and it was about 8 or 9 months after that trip to the ICU and her subsequent trips to detox and recovery centers and getting bounced out of that, that she was dead on a motel room floor on the other side of the town I live in. And I had my son at that time was 7 years old. Yeah, of course he's messed up. Who loses their mom at 7 and doesn't have some sort of issue to deal with? His sisters, you know, there I am with 3 kids. You know, I got sober and I married her and I thought, you know, this is God's will. It feels so good. Must be God's will. And you know, she was a user and a drinker, and I thought, if I'm just a spiritual giant, I'm just going to save her. I'm going to walk on water, baby. A misinterpretation of 6 and 7, I'll tell you. And, you know, I tried for 17 years to fix that woman. And if love and my attention could have done that, I tried everything I knew. Tried getting a new job, a new car, a new house, another kid, some braces, some clothes, some this and that. And there I was. 17 years later, dead on a hotel room floor, 3 kids to raise. So, you know, when I see my son like that, it just gets me a little bit riled up about the steps and being serious about what we do here. And we have a lot of fun in Alcoholics Anonymous. There is no doubt about that. But underlying that, this thing is a deadly disease that wants to take us in a heartbeat. So I'm faced with that proposition. And, you know, I'm working on my come meet Jesus talk with him as soon as he gets lucid, right? Because this week he was out of it. He was on all kinds of meds. He was coming detoxing. And, you know, they had to tie him down in restraints. And he would come out of these la-la land, finding himself in restraints and just losing it, trying to rip out all his IVs and nasal cannula. It was a rough week. I did not sleep much. And I had to drive home, and my daughter came down. My eldest daughter came down to stay with him for a couple of days because it's very important, I think, to have someone there. And, you know, when I told him he was having a lucid moment during that week, I said, well, you know, your sister's coming down. And his response was like, fuck, 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 because she's the matriarch of the family. She's not going to bridge any bullshit from him. And so we are... trying to get to the timing to where he's lucid enough to understand what he has done to himself and what has caused that. Because now he's been, like my wife, he has compartmentalized all his relationships with family and friends and whatnot. And pretty soon, you know, you're running along juggling all those balls. And, well, you know, he dropped his balls. And so... The friends have started talking to the family, and the family started talking to the friends, and we figured things out. And, you know, some of his roommates went in and cleared out multiple mini liquor bottles of Fireball. See, in November, I said, so you're not going to drink now, right? That's killing your pancreas. No, I'll try for 2 months and see how it goes. So in that time from November to now, he has killed 70% of his pancreas, and his roommates and his friends started finding all these little liquor bottles of Fireball. So yeah, how'd that controlled drinking go for you? And so, you know, when we say, yeah, maybe you ought to step over to the bar and try controlled drinking, We got to remember that that's also a dangerous proposition as well, because he could be dead right now. Anyway, so we're waiting to get to a time when we can have that conversation with him. And by any chance, you know, he's not going to listen to me. I know that. I'm smart enough to know that. That dad goes that stupid AA, and, well, it only, you know, puts you through college, you stupid little entitled snot. You know, so it's once again, I love Dr. Bob's prescription that is trust God, clean house, work with others, right? And so in the trust God portion, it has been a huge lesson to learn and learn and learn and learn. So when we talk about practicing these principles in all our affairs, for me, it is practice. I'm never going to perfect it. And that powerlessness that we have over other people's situations in the world at large, people on the freeway, you know, it's a lesson I learn over and over and over, and it's taken my spiritual experience to a deeper and deeper level. So, you know, when I was powerless over alcohol, sure, that's okay, but is my life unmanageable? Oh, come on, I have a job, you know. I had parlayed a college career into a minimum wage bookkeeping job, and, you know, I did have a girlfriend for the time being, but she was about to boot me, so, you know, it was hard for me to accept that my life is unmanageable, and I've had to learn that over and over and over in Alcoholics Anonymous. See, I was like, Charlie, I wanted to get sober in January, and I didn't make it till April, 5 years later. So drinking against our will is our hallmark, and I did a lot of that, and I kept wondering, what's happening? If I could just figure out what the secret sauce is here in life and figure out that strategy, I would be happy. I would have the babe I want, the house and the car and all this bitching stuff. And I could never figure it out. I wonder what the problem is, you know? And at one point when she threw me out and got rid of me, everything crashed in. And so I have learned powerlessness over and over and over again. With my first wife, I was powerless over her. I'm not the sharpest bulb in the chandelier, but, you know, 17 years of trying to fix her, and finally it didn't work, and the light bulb went on. It's like, you know, you've got to save yourself, and you've got to save those kids. And over the years, you know, if we talk about the fears inventory, you know, if you want to experience fear, you just get married. If that isn't enough for you, have some kids. I swear that oldest daughter that's down there with my son today and tomorrow, holding, you know, trying to see what she can do to help him. When she was 16, she disappeared one night. She went to a party with some friends. You know, I didn't think much of it until she didn't come home. And then she didn't come home. And then she still wasn't home. I started making the phone calls. And her friend was drunk and throwing up and didn't know what had happened. Her other friend was unavailable. And I started driving around town looking for her. She still hadn't reached out and touched, you know, to tell me what is going on. And I was beside myself, you know, with fear and everything, because I was a teenage boy and she was a teenage girl. And I, you know, I'm not stupid. So it was about 4 a.m. and I just was like, beside myself crying and just losing it, and just came to that surrender to that God of my understanding that got me sober. See, I'm not sure why I worry, because I learn this every time, that there's the most magnificent power out there, infinite, eternal, immortal love that got me sober one day. All I had to do was follow Mom's advice, right? Mom used to say, there are two little words I know that will open any door with me. The first little word is thank you. The second little word is please. And like, Mom, thank you is two words. But that's my approach to spirituality. My first day that I stayed sober, I said, please God, keep me sober today. Don't let me drink. And I made it one day without drinking. One day. I hadn't done that in such a long time. I told you I controlled drinking for 5 years. One day I stayed sober. And at the end of that day I said, thank you. Please and thank you. every day. And I've been trying to do that every day in my life. And it works. So what am I afraid of? This incredible power that entered my life just by me stepping aside and allowing it to come through has worked time and time again. And so that morning at 4 a.m. when I'm crying and sniveling, snot flying everywhere, I'm worried about my daughter. I was just, okay, God, whatever your will is, in this moment, I'll accept that. I'll accept it. And something happened. She didn't call. But something happened inside of me. The fear was lifted. I was able to get in bed and go to sleep. And I woke up and she called, like 7 or 8 in the morning. I'm fine, Dad. Man, it is hard to be a parent. And there's other so when my wife passed away, there I was with 3 kids. I'm a single dad all of a sudden. And like, what the hell do I do? And by that time, I had stopped going to meetings for a lot of years during that marriage because I was going to manage and control and figure things out. And if you're managing and controlling things and trying to figure it out, God bless you. You know, if you're new, you might, be able to open ChatGPT and find a way around this, not have to do this crap, 12 steps. God, what kind of strategy is that? And good luck with that, because that's what I tried, and I was absolutely batshit crazy as you'd ever want to be, and I had no relief from the bottle or the drugs at all. I was just crazy, mad, lunatic, trying to hold up to the outside world how good it was going inside the McNulty house, when inside it was just a kind of house where you put your hand on the doorknob and go, I don't know if I even want to open this door. I don't know what's going to be on the other side. So, in trying to control everything, I can't. I learned that over and over and over and over. That I cannot control and manage things without the help of a loving God. But when I do manage to introduce that God into my life, things change. Things get different. Now, I met Mati shortly after, well, I'd met him before. He was my postman, and my dog tried to eat him. But we weren't on the best of terms. But when I came back to AA, it was like I sat in a meeting that I hadn't been in for a long time. I finally pulled my head out of my ass and started going to meetings again. I hadn't drank, might as well have, but I hadn't. And they started reading how it works, and I just broke down in tears. I was like, man, I have cut myself off from the sunlight of the Spirit, and I'm living in hell. And there I am with 3 kids to raise, and I don't know what the hell to do. And Monty was there. We go through daily sessions. What do you want to do? I don't know. I don't have kids, but maybe if we ask God, some answers will come. And that's what we did. I invited God into my life. I said, I don't know what you need me to do, but let's do this. And I started making stupid prayers, like praying for patience and serenity. And I'd be upstairs praying, and no sooner I stopped praying than World War III broke out over who got the last Cheerios. And like, oh. But every day I did that, and I just said, God, what do you need me to do here? What do I got to do? Get my marching orders for today. See, it talks about that. It's really simple in the book, right? If you read that thing, it talks about it in 86, 87. Ask him in your morning meditation, what do you do each day for the man who is still sick? The answers will come if your own house is in order. And that's what happens. The answers come when my house is in order, when I clean it up. All of a sudden, all the stuff that I'm worried about, I get out of that house and go down the street. God could come in and clean shit up. He does quite fine. It's like, we'll just get through the unmanageable story. So, okay, so my wife died. I'm raising 3 kids. Monty's helping me. And I've managed to make it through and get the kids, right, got them through college. The last one's ready to go off to college, and I have a sore throat. And I don't want to go to get a CAT scan because it might cost me money. And I like money. I like to keep it. I hate to spend it. I give it to other people. And so I wasn't going to get this CAT scan. See, this ear, nose, and throat guy. I said, well, we need to rule out cancer. I said, oh, well, let's just rule it out. We won't spend the money. And my wife, the wife I have now, who's very smart, said, why don't you call up and find out how much it is? I never thought of that. It was going to be like $100. So, okay, I'll get the test. So that was April 1st, 2014, and at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, the phone rang. It was the doctor. And if you've had any dealings with doctors, they don't call you with good news at 5 in the afternoon. And he said, look, this is stage 4 cancer, and we got to get on this, and we got to treat it. And it wasn't a joke. And so, you know, what he said was, we're going to cure this most of the time, but you're not going to like the treatment. Now, stop me if that sounds familiar, anyone who's worked the steps. Because we come in here and we want to manage and control and figure this thing out. And people propose these steps, and I don't want to do those. Step 4, I mean, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to look at step 4 and 5 and go, uh-uh, I don't want to do that. Step 9, oh no, I stole all that money fair and square. I don't have to pay that back. Come on, that's a little bit extreme. And, you know, the cancer therapy involved a lot of chemo, called 3 rounds of chemo. And my buddy Monty had the same cancer, not the exact same cancer, that'd be weird, but it involved chemo and radiation, you know. And it hurt so bad, the pain was ridiculous. I was on fentanyl patches and Vicodin. I still to this day have a hole where they had to put a gut tube in to eat. And every day sitting on the couch going, if this doesn't work, I am effed. God, what do you need me to do? And it was just a matter of making it through to the next moment. God help me, just get it to the next moment. And you'll have days like that in sobriety. You'll have times when it's just get me through this next moment. Their days are tough. You know, I had this unimaginable, immature fairy tale notion that if I got sober and talk about step 6 and 7, remove all these defects, I was going to be bitching and cool and just walk on water. See, the spiritual experience for me has been that I've had a spiritual experience. Everything has changed, though nothing's different. I still have to chop wood and carry water. I still got to wash dishes and do the laundry. But everything's different. And so, you know, proceeding through that, I survived that cancer. It was a long-ass haul, like 9 months before we could eat again. And even still to this day, I don't produce enough saliva to enjoy, you know, a dry meal. Like, don't give me white chicken. You know, I can only eat the dark meat. You know, if you're going to give me meat, give me lots of gravy. And I made it through. And it's only because I could go to meetings. I could, you know, sit, and I couldn't really talk because my throat hurt so bad. You know, it was just, God help me. And, you know, the simplest prayer, God help me. And then I did have one other story about powerlessness, and that's my son, you know. So here I am, I'm faced with it again. Oh, no, my daughter. So my oldest daughter that went missing and is now helping with my son. She was diagnosed in 2023 with acute myeloid leukemia. And I'm like, this is coming on the heels of my wife having breast cancer and me having cancer. And I'm really quite full of the tests and trials, God, thanks, you know? I was like, I thought I was done with this, right? I got to do this now? Really? I was pretty pissed at God in 2023. All the guys who are here from Soul Dead Men's heard me, you know? I was like, take that. And my understanding of God, my understanding was just, you know, the only answer I could really hear from him was, look, I love you so much, Bill. End of story. See, I don't get to be privy of what God's notions are and what he needs to have done in this world. That's not my pay grade. That's his pay grade. So if I have a bunch of fears that I don't understand and I can't deal with, it's God's turn. It's like, dude, you make the big bucks. You handle these, you know? And so, you know, she survived that. You know, she ran a half marathon in November. And she's got a bone marrow transplant. But I spent a lot of time up at Stanford Medical Center because that's what we do. See, when I made my 9-step amends to my parents, it wasn't just, sorry, see you later. No, they wanted me to be a decent human being. They said, just keep doing what you're doing. Be sober and be a decent human being, which means a living amends. And that means showing up for your family and your friends. And so when I was at Stanford Medical, it wasn't what I did. I mean, I brought flowers, and I did stuff, and all that, but it's our presence. You see, I've been blessed with the divine presence of loving, mother-loving God, the creator of the universe. Course is through me, And my presence is enough to just bring that into relationships. See, when they say, you know, come to meetings, that's what we bring. This meeting sizzles and crackles with that spirit. It's alive and well in here. If you don't know that, take another man through the inventory process. I swear, I sat in doing an inventory with a man I did not like. He was a spoiled little trust fund shit. But he wanted to stay sober. And in the middle of that process, there was a time when I just looked at him and the sun, the light was hitting his face, and I just knew the presence of God was in that room. No doubt about it. God had put me in that place to do that thing at that moment. And if you haven't had that experience, take another person through the steps. See, working with others unlocks the entire thing. For me, you know, that was Bill Wilson's experience, wasn't it? He was just sobbing and crying to Lois. I'm not getting anyone else sober. They all just go back to drinking. And she's like, yeah, but you stayed sober. Bingo. That's the one thing we have. See, everything else, all the spiritual practices in Alcoholics Anonymous, they've been around for centuries, right? The inventory process, confession in the Catholic Church. Any Catholics in here? Yeah. I never told the truth in confession. Heck no. Yeah, Father, I forgot to take the trash out once, and I was mean to my sister. Three Hail Marys and an Our Father. I'm off the hook. See, I just wanted to check that box off and get out the door and down the road doing my thing. And that's what I was when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're like that, hang around till you're not. Because this is a process that goes on ad infinitum. I'm here forever. I am an imperfect human being trying to do this deal. And perfection is not the goal, so I just practice, practice, practice. That's why I go to meetings. I hear new things, I see new things, and I watch a miracle happen in other people's lives, and it encourages me to go on. So the inventory process is pretty simple, right? You know, we list all our characters, we list all our resentments, and of course we're all like, well, good, now we get to get this out, and then you can see why I am the way I am. See, I'm married to this narrative when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, that if I just can explain what happened, it will be okay. You'll understand how I roll, and then I can get down the road doing what I want to do when I want to do it. And what happened in the inventory process for me is, I like to read since I bought this. And if anyone has ever seen this, it's a pamphlet called A Member's Eye View of Alcoholics Anonymous, one of my wife's favorites. Oh, jeez, I'm not sure if I have the right glasses. Got glasses for reading, glasses for driving, glasses for this. I'm going blind. It's like my mother's curse finally come back. So, in this talk given to by an AA member, and one of the paragraphs in here is what I think it applies to the fourth and fifth step is, I am personally convinced that the basic search of every human being from the cradle to the grave is to find at least one other human being before whom he can stand completely naked, stripped of all pretense or defense, and trust that person not to hurt him, because that other person has stripped himself naked too. This lifelong search can begin to end with the first AA encounter. And that was my experience of the fifth step of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was so afraid of it that I didn't want to do it. If you haven't done it, I know, I get it. That walking in, I thought my life was going to be over, I was going to be laughed out of the room, this gentleman was going to find me a reprehensible, horrible pervert, and I was, you know, that would be it. Instead, what I did was hurt some of his stuff. He was crazy. My goodness. And anyway, you know, the first resentments inventory, what I learned is that I am accountable. I am accountable for everything that's happened in my life, all the problems I'm having. The common link is me. And that at first seems like very bad news, but you know what? It's the best news I've ever heard in my life, because if I'm accountable, then I can do something about it. Now, I don't like what the book suggests I do about it. Like, if I'm resentful of another person, I pray for them. Seriously? You know what that guy did? No, we pray for them. See, the other part of that accountability is then the forgiveness. Because forgiveness is one of the most powerful spiritual experiences I've ever had in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my heart softened up. See, for me, it's all about opening up my heart to a loving presence of that power. And I can't do it if I can't forgive you. You know, it starts on the freeway. My new thing is, you cut me off, it's like, you are forgiven. You are forgiven. No. And in my heart, I can soften that heart. See, I came in here cynical, sarcastic, and judgy little prick. Not much has changed. Other than I have learned a few spiritual principles, forgiveness being chief amongst them. If you're married, you got to learn to forgive your spouse, right? We get married and we get sucked into the microscopic minutia of our partner's failures and shortcomings. And what we really don't realize is that there's a whole billboard of good news out there about our partner. But without this inventory process, I don't realize that. And without forgiveness, I will hold on to that resentment, and that will fester in that relationship. All of a sudden, we'll be a bomb-ass, you know, argument about something that's innocuous. But really, what's underneath it is the continuous non-tendence and non-maintenance of that relationship. And then the fears inventory. You know, we talked about fears, and you know, fear is necessarily a bad thing. It's just a thing. It's part of a human experience. If it's here, God made it. So what are we going to do with it? Well, you know, for one thing, I don't go, you know, picking fights with guys that are bigger than me. That's pretty good fear. Also, there's a fear. I used to sell drugs for a living, and legitimate ones. I worked for a pharmaceutical company, and of course, they make more money and probably kill more people than any street drugs combined, but I digress. And in that, and there's two things from the drugs. Is number one is there's got to be a therapeutic range for all the medicine, right? There's a range that operates in. Too little, it's not effective. Too much, and you OD. And that's kind of what the ego is for me, is I have to have enough ego to be effective messenger of God's will in this world. Too little ego, and I'm not going to show up. I don't have enough willingness to show up and talk to a newcomer. I don't have any respect for who I am or what I've learned here in AA. Too much ego, and I'm like a useless, you know, big shot. You know, we've all seen our big shot AAs. They come in here and strut and stuff, and it's just like, oh, my God, help me. But I've got to keep my ego in that therapeutic range where I'm an effective messenger of God's message here, which is, you know, you can get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. You can have a useful and effective life if you do the deal. So don't, you know, come in here, don't do the 12 steps, and then walk out that door and tell everyone out there AA doesn't work when you haven't done what it takes to get the results that you haven't done the work for, right? So, you know, the fears inventory is what we put it down on paper. Why do we have them? Offer them up to God. Another step closer to that spiritual experience. So I had tremendous fears that I had to overcome in doing the steps. I didn't want to do them. Who does? You know, it talks about, and there is a solution. That's the first chapter I went to, by the way, when I got the book. It's like, there's a solution. Okay, let's find the shortcut and get this shit over with. You know, I'm done. There is a solution. Almost none of us like the process that it required, the leveling of pride and the confession of shortcomings. You show me the first person that enjoyed that process will be the first person I've ever met that enjoyed it. No, of course we don't enjoy it. We got to do stuff we don't want to do. We're taking a cure that we don't want to take that's going to hurt. So what? Man up, show up, do the deal. And, we learned to let go of those fears. Fears also, you know, I don't want, you know, in doing the drug sales, I would sit in offices and see, you know, guys my age coming in there with, you know, grocery bags full of medicines that they've been put on because they, you know, didn't take care of themselves. So it gave me a healthy fear of not wanting to do that. And so, I try and stay healthy, try to stay active, try to eat decent. You know, I'm just practicing. I'm not perfect, but it's worked so far, you know. Then the sex inventory, which we all think is going to be so exciting. It's on page 69. Come on. Let's get it. And it just turns out to be a big nothing. Like, a list of people I've harmed and aroused jealousy. And then it's like, okay. So the important part is to have an ideal sex life. And so we put that out there, put it in our minds that that's what we're going to try and grow towards. And it talks about, you know, maybe you come at it from, you know, the straight pepper diet where sex is the answer to everything, or the monastic lifestyle where you only procreate. And I tell you, every fifth step I've ever heard is more closer to a pepper diet than anything I've ever heard. So, you know, we get through the inventory process and then we get to 6 and 7, right? And I'm quite willing for God to remove all those shortcomings. And this is where I thought, man, I am going to be struck bitching. And that didn't happen. It's the practice every day that I have to be attendant to how I'm behaving in this world. You know, it teaches me the things that I'm looking out for on the fourth column of our fourth step. You know, where was I selfish, self-centered, dishonest, discourteous, dishonest, and fearful? And if you open up the 12 and 12, you know, there is a companion book, in case you haven't read that. It talks about the seven deadly sins: envy, greed, gluttony, pride, anger, lust, and sloth. Okay, so now we've got 5 plus 7. That's 12 things to keep track of. And then on top of that, you know, throwing that I always want to be right, and I always want to prove that I'm better than you. So now we're up to 14. Look, it's no wonder I got to go to meetings. That's just a lot to keep a track of. And if I do, that's a part of where trust God, clean house. I got to keep my house clean, so I've got to keep track of what I'm doing, and then I've got to clean up my past. And when I go to do that, I knew that I had stolen a lot of money from a restaurant worker I worked for, and I knew he was going to call the sheriffs on me and throw me in jail when I went to make amends. I was positive that was going to happen. And I had another experience of that God on the steps of that restaurant where I said, okay, God, if I got to go to jail today, I'll do it. And I went in there and I told him I'd ripped him off. And I said about how much, and I started to make payments. He goes, it's no big deal. Yeah, I get ripped off all the time. Thanks. Okay. So, you know, trusting God, clean house. And so I try and keep the slate clean. I don't go out and make things that I have to make amends for, because quite frankly, I hate making amends. It's humbling, and I don't like that. But when I'm wrong, I have to admit it. Now, if my wife was here, she could tell you chapter and verse where I was wrong, and I haven't admitted I was wrong, because, yeah, I'm a work in progress. So I'm not here to say I'm perfect. I'm here to say I'm trying. And if I'm trying, I'm in the game. See, I got a second chance, and it might be the only chance. If you're here sober as a second chance, you better stay. That's all I got to say. Because I've seen plenty of people who have taken this too lightly and said, I'll come back to AA. We had a good friend from Soul Dead Men's, Vince. He was going to come back. He'd gone out, and he's going to come back. And come back the next Saturday. He was going to come back, and he was just going to do a little bit more blow. Well, he got some blow that was laced with fentanyl. Vince is dead. So there's that. And I know I see there's a lot of newcomers and a good stack of papers here. So, I hope you stay. So what's been gifted to me is a chance to have a life worth living. And the last portion of Dr. Bob's prescription is help others. And now, when I read the big book and I read about the 12th step, I was fairly convinced that if I did this thing, I was going to have to go to Africa and spread the message. I was going to be living in a hut, abject poverty, and that was going to be my life. Nobody's bought me a trip to Africa. Nobody sent me anywhere. Trust me, there's plenty of drunks in America. But in carrying this message of hope, that's my primary purpose. Stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Pure and simple. When I stray from that, for example, let's just say, for example, that for the last 8 years you've been caught up in politics. I don't care which side you fall on. You were caught up in them. And then one day things didn't go your way. Well, it's good to have a primary purpose when the shit hits the fan. Call another alcoholic. Call a guy who can't stay sober today. Call someone who's, you know, whose life has been augured in. All of a sudden, none of that matters. I haven't checked social media and anything. And you know what? The world has gone on. My purpose is to help other alcoholics. I got a couple new guys and working the steps with them. So, you know, we a lot of people don't want to sponsor other people, take them through the steps. I get it, you know? There's a tremendous amount of fear. Of course you're not going to be good at it. You've never done it. Hello? And so you start with one. And, you know, you might kill the first couple, but... you'll get better. So what is unlocked in that trance, that energy, that spirit that has come into my life and kept me sober? What happens when I transfer that to another human being is I get to stay sober. There's a tremendous energy exchange, and I've seen men pick up their deathbeds and walk. I've seen people put families back together. I've seen miracles happen, and the biggest miracle I see is that the hope once again, the hopeless once again have hope. See, I don't understand, from having been through a spiritual experience onto this side of the fence, how it's so hard to sell hope to the hopeless. I mean, come on. Your best life strategies have landed you in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you still think you got it going on. That's where I was. I get it. Why would I do this and hang out with them? Because I can promise you is on the other side of that is a life worth living. And I tell you, I've told you my story. Lots of not so fun stuff has happened in my life. The book talks about when, tough things come our way, we gladly seize upon it as an opportunity to display God's omnipotence. And I'm like, I'm not glad about this, God. It's like, really? I got to do this? I got to do that? And nowhere in here does it say I have to be happy about it. What I got to do, though, is remember that I've been gifted with a life worth living, that this God has entered in my life because of the things I've done, the 12 steps I've taken, and the things I continue to try to do with other alcoholics and to spread this message. So, I would like to close by the closing paragraph once again. A member's eye view of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is, okay, the last two paragraphs. Okay, more than 16 years ago, four men, my boss, my physician, my pastor, and the one friend I had left, working singly and together, maneuvered me into AA. Tonight, if they were to ask me, tell us, what did you find? I would say to them, what I now say to you. I can tell you only what I have heard and seen. It seems the blind do see, the lame do walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead rise, and over again, in the middle of the longest day or the darkest night, the poor in spirit have the good news told to them. God grant them may always be so. Thank you. Yeah.